You are listening to Indie Soul Rhythms with Minchi Alfonso.
It's good for us. And it's good for me, yeah.
The show that brings you the very best in Indie Soul. It's probably the grooviest show on the planet.
Welcome, everybody. Today, we're joined by singer-songwriter Mike D. Cole. Mike, welcome to Indie Soul Rhythms.
Man, thanks for having me, bro. I appreciate it.
The pleasure is ours.
Oh, yeah.
I think without further ado, we're just going to dive right into it and just hear your story, share with our listeners, let them know who you are and you know what projects you're working on and what music is out there for them to look out for. So, but we're going to start from the early beginnings and your musical inspiration. You grew up in the South Side of Chicago,
yep.
A city with rich musical history. How did that environment shape your love for music and your journey as an artist?
Growing up, like born and raised in Chicago, you know, of course we have some greats, you know, that always, you know, I'm not sure if he was from there, but I know he moved there, like Sam Cooke.
Yes.
You know, and you have like me, I'm a huge fan, and you can hear like in my music, Dave Hollister from, you know, Blackstreet.
Yes.
You know, amazing writer. I know people don't love the things that you do, but you know, R. Kelly is just an amazing writer.
Oh, no. You know? I know.
yeah. And you know, we always have to put in, you know, we always have to say, you know, that part.
Yeah, but you got to put a disclaimer, but you can't
exactly.
Take away the
disclaimer. Yeah. But you can't take away what he has done musically, because you're erasing a part of your life. Like
Absolutely.
A lot of us grew up on that music.
Absolutely.
It's you know, you have to be able to separate or whatever, you know, but as a writer and performer, amazing, you know, Donnell Jones, you know, Mr. Loco Crazy, even though he's a rapper, Kanye West, you know. But, you know, growing up in Chicago, that's kind of like what that inspired, you know, for me. You know, it's just a heart and soul of music or whatever. And then my mom transported us here in Minneapolis. And like you have in the background, Mr. Prince himself, you know.
Yeah.
So it's more live music sound and things like that. So, you know, always been rich in culture as far as music or whatever. So that's, you know, how I was brought up or whatever, you know?
Yeah, I see you also got the South Minneapolis behind you, Alex O'Neill right there.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yeah. Now, I had my producer actually worked with him, and he first told me actually when he, you know, we made a trip over there in the UK, but I heard he was like a legend over in the UK, selling out the Wimbledon so many different times or whatever. And I'm like, dude, he's like a legend over there. I couldn't, you know, believe that, you know. So, but you know, Alexander O'Neill, a great artist, you know, amazing songs, things like that, you know. So, yeah, it's always like, man, I'm enriched, I'm engulfed with music all around me. So it's always been that way, you know.
Yeah. Not to mention the two major producers, Terry and Jimmy Jam.
Definitely. Most definitely.
Yeah.
You know, I've always, even, you know, with Jimmy Jam and Terrace, I've always been in proximity, close to, you know, like I've written for a certain artist or whatever. And I'm always like two or three people in between actually kind of meeting those guys,
right.
You know? So I've worked with artists that work with them, but I haven't had the chance, the pleasure to actually meet them and everything like that, even though I'm here in the Twin Cities or whatever.
Yeah,
but I'm always right there by it. So, you know, just in a little bit of time, I'll be right there in the room with him somewhere.
Everything happens at the right time.
It definitely does, man.
Yeah,
it definitely
yeah. Does. So yeah. When did you first realize that you had a gift for singing? And who were, we've talked about, we kind of know what influenced you, but when did you first realize you had the gift for music?
You know, I've always talked to my mom about this. I always said, you know, a lot of times when kids, I feel like God gives, you know, kids a glimpse of what they're going to do or what they're going to be when they're very young. You may not notice it or whatever.
Yeah.
I remember my mom told me when I was probably like about 3 years old, I used to always just do a little hum. I used to like, you know, and she was like, well, where'd you get that from? You know, but so from there, I actually just started, you know, just listening to a lot of music. And my uncle exposed me to a lot of music.
Yeah.
My uncle stayed with us one point in time. And, you know, he's always, you know, take me to what they used to call the flea market, you know, in Chicago.
Yeah.
And we would go shopping for music. So he always put music in me. So from 4 or 5 years old, my uncle used to sing in a band, and he sounded very much like Luther Vandross. And he used to take me with him, and I was like, you know, can I get up there and sing with him? And he was like, do you think you're ready type of thing, you know? And I didn't take it serious, not until I heard New Edition. When I heard New Edition, I'm like, wait a minute, those sounds like kids. They sound like I can do the same thing, you know? So New Edition kind of exposed me to kids can sing. But it wasn't until Bobby Brown went solo, and I seen Bobby Brown, I'm like, oh, that's what I want to do. I want to do that right there. So, yeah, Bobby was the ultimate for me, you know. So anywhere from 5 on up, man, I just always loved music. Yeah. I still didn't take it serious, you know. I was a kid, played basketball, but I know I can do it, you know. And, of course, when you're a kid, your parents used to always, when there's family functions, they, hey, come and sing for your uncles and your aunties. Listen how my baby sound, da-da-da, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was always cool and fun to do those things, man, you know. But, yeah, it was from that point on, you know, I always enjoyed it. And I knew I had a talent for it, you know. But, yeah, that was around that time.
That's amazing. You took us way, way, way back. New Edition, yep. And Bobby leaving New Edition.
Yeah.
I remember that time, and I was actually quite disappointed that he left, because I felt like, oh, come on, how can you do this?
Yeah.
And he went solo and he produced his first album.
Yep.
I was like,
you know, and I think the crazy thing is I remember the first song they started promoting, I remember like it was yesterday, that was a song called Girl Next Door.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So when I first seen it, I'm like, oh, this is kind of cool, but it's kind of weird seeing them by itself.
Yeah.
And the crazy thing is, I remember when they brought Johnny Gill into the group, you know, but when they brought Johnny in, I had never seen it, but I remember the first song they had performed and I heard Johnny on there, but I'm used to these kid sounds. And I remember Johnny's voice sounds so rich and so different.
Yeah.
And I told my uncle, I'm like, hey, they got Luther Vandross on their song. He was like, no, it's not Luther. He was like, that's, you know, Johnny Gill, part of the group. I'm like, no, that's Luther. He's like, that's a grown man singing with kids.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was shocked. I'm like, whoa, this dude's voice, you know, but it didn't match to me when I first heard it. It was it was just really so different, you know?
Yeah. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So in 2013, you wrote your first song, Lost Without You.
Yeah.
What was it like putting your emotions into that song for the first time, and how did that experience shape your songwriting approach?
Well, that was like the first song. That was the first song I had written like by myself, no co-writers or anything like that. Prior to, I had always kind of co-wrote some things. You know, I had did a couple singles when I was trying to find myself as an artist. So a producer friend of mine who's a songwriter and everything like that, we always co-wrote things or whatever, you know, but I had never tapped into my true feelings, you know? So when Lost Without You came, of course, you know, what inspired stuff like that was a heartbreak, you know? And it was like my first kind of like adult love type of thing, you know? And so I think I was like, it was like they always say, you know, your best writing is going to come at your worst heartbreak or whatever, you know? So I remember at the time I had, you know, lost my place. I was living at home, you know, at my mom's, and I was like on the couch, you know, lost my girlfriend, all that stuff there, man. And just that melody started coming, you know, and I just started, you know, humming and, you know, singing it. And then I think I let, you know, just what I had, the concept of it, I had let my brother hear it. He was like, bro, I like that, you know? And it was funny because one of those things, I had tried to write songs prior to, you know, but I can never stay focused enough to finish a song.
Yeah.
But of course, that heartbreak channeled that and it just spilled out of me, you know. And I didn't know I had something really big with that song until my producer had put it all together. That was the first song I heard that was like mixed, mastered, and it was my first professional sounding song.
Right.
You know, I had worked with, you know, guys who basement producers type of thing, and everything sounded okay. But that song was one of the things that crossed over for me. And I had put the song on a site called Reverb Nation.
Right.
And once I put it on Reverb Nation, Verizon Mobile heard it.
Yeah.
And, you know, they invited me to come out and perform. And at that time, I was staying here in Minnesota, but they had this big showcase where they flew me back to Chicago. And it was a legendary place in Chicago called Buddy Guy's Legend.
Yeah.
You know, they flew me out there to perform with the chance of performing in front of amongst other huge, you know, not huge, but, you know, other talents, artists came together to try to win an opportunity to go and perform for New Orleans at the Essence Festival. So we, you know, they flew us out there. And mind you, this is my first time performing in front of a whole bunch of people. You know, we have Buddy Guy's Legend, but here's the crazy thing. So we have the people that said Buddy Guy's Legend, but then there's cameras on us that stream into thousands and thousands of people. And this was my first time. So I'm up there with the band, getting ready to perform Lost Without You. But also we had to perform, you know, a couple cover songs. And of course, like I said, I'm a huge Dave Hollister fan.
Yeah.
You know, I can recite Dave Hollister songs with no problem. I get up there, get ready to do my Dave Hollister song, and I get in my head and I start thinking about all these thousands of people streaming at me. I forget every word. I forget the melody. I forget, like, I couldn't think of nothing. I probably forgot my own name at that point, you know? And I'm like, oh my God, I'm standing in front of these people and I don't know what to sing. I can't even make up nothing. Just mind just shot, you know? And I try to whisper to the band, hey, can we start over? He's like, nah, we can't. So I'm like, oh my God. So I'm just sitting up there. And that was my introduction to performing in front of people, whatever. I'm like, ah. So that moment, I could have looked at it like, I'm through with this, or do I love it to where the point of, I'm going to get up here, I'm going to rehearse, I'm going to get better, and I'm going to perform to the best, and I'm going to be the best that I can, you know, whatever. So
yeah.
I took the other way and continued doing what I was doing, man. But yeah, that was a hard pill to swallow for that first time, man.
I think that's one thing that people don't realize, the stuff that you have to go through to get to where you are, especially yeah. when performing live.
Yes.
You know, you've just mentioned like forgetting words and all that. I mean, that can have a very, very huge impact, you know, mentally for you.
Yes, it can. Yes, it can.
It can either destroy you or make you.
Listen, I don't have the best memory. So this is the messed up part. And at first I thought it was just me, but then I listened to a lot of artists have the same problem. I wrote a lyrics to my own songs, and I still to this day be forgetting my songs.
Yeah.
But the key, unless you got super fans, the key is they're not going to know you forgot it, you know, so you just go ahead and do something different. They don't know yeah. when you mess up a show, but
yeah.
you thinking they know, they don't know, you know, just keep doing what you're doing or whatever. But yeah, still to this day, I still forget lyrics because here's the thing with me. I think a lot. And so there's so many things that come together is performing. You got to think of moves. You got to think of the audience engaging. There's a whole bunch of things going on in your head. You got to remember melodies. You got to remember tempos. You got to remember all the lyrics of your song. So I think so much to where I'm dropping the ball somewhere and I'll forget lyrics. I'm like, oh God, you know, but
yeah.
It's a part of the show. You know, you keep on going, but once you get seasoned at it, you'll know how to, you know, maneuver through it, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that was in 2013, and then 2016, you received an HMMA nomination for Find a Love, a Way to Love.
Yes, sir.
What did that recognition mean to you? And how did it then influence your artistic direction?
Yeah. So I think I had with Find a Way to Love, it beforehand, when I first did, you know, Lost Without You or whatever, I looked at it was like, it's a hobby, you know, it was a fluke, you know, that they did it. I wasn't so sure of myself as an artist or whatever. And I was just, you know, in Minneapolis and in Chicago. I'm thinking this is where I'm from type of thing.
Yeah.
But with HMMA, that's in California. So once I, you know, once I got that nomination for that, I was like, okay, maybe I am good. You know, maybe I can do this for a living. Maybe people do enjoy what it is that I do. Yeah. You know, so once I put that out and I was nominated, you know, I flew out to California, you know, to be a part of this big production. And I didn't think so. Also, I thought it was going to be some little small, you know, event. And I go there and I'm inside this huge, you know, auditorium or whatever it was with some of the best, you know, people in the business. I'm drawing a blank right now. She's an amazing writer and she wrote for everybody. I can't remember her name. I'm going to remember when it's all done, but she wrote for so many people. It's ridiculous. And I'm like, I'm in a room with her. I think Randy Jackson, who was from, you know, was he from American Idol? I think.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah. He played bass for Mariah Carey at some yes. point. Yeah.
Yes. Yep. He was in there. There was a few people from Earth, Wind & Fire in there. I'm like, oh, this is huge. I'm in here with a, so I'm like, okay, for the first time, I'm like, okay, I belong, you know? So that's what Find a Way to Love did for me when we put that out. And I'm like, okay, I can do this. I'm, you know, I feel worthy, somewhat worthy of being here. You know, people enjoy the music that I do, you know? But also again, that's what the UK do for me. Because once I get reluctant and hesitant of writing new stuff now because music has taken a turn. It's changing so yeah. much. And to me, it's so microwave. It's so not enough feeling, not enough connection. You know, so when I put stuff out here in the States now, people don't even know how to receive it because they're just used to something. They play in their ear off a stream and real fast, and then they on to the next song.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, I had to live with these feelings. I had to live with these emotions. I had to go in and put these emotions on recording, and you're going to listen to it one time. It's like, oh, that's cool, and move on. Bro, I had to live with this. So I love being around people who can sit with something and eat off of it. You know, like, you know, that's what I feel. Again, that's what I love so much about coming to the UK or whatever. People live with music. They feel music. You know, people here, they listen, but they don't feel. And that's the part that really just, it, many times, I at times I'm like, oh, I'm done with music or whatever, but I got these feelings inside.
Right.
And I don't feel like, you know, it gets the just due until, you know, I put it out. And of course you get the UK love or just anywhere overseas in different places like that. It's like, you know, it's so microwaved here. It's not a good feeling when, you know, as artists, we put our emotions into our music and it's not received the way we would like it to.
I think you've articulated it very well because I've spoken to quite a number of artists who tell me about how music has changed in the US and how they feel music is more appreciated in the UK. But I didn't quite understand what they were talking about. But you actually put it in a way that actually I think even listeners will understand that it's about people who appreciate music and sit with music. Because I remember when, you know, growing up, you'd buy, like an LP and
yes,
you sit on it.
Yes.
For ages, yes. Listening, yes. listening. Yes. But today it's like, I mean, I'm receiving like in excess of about 100 tracks a week.
Mm.
Every single week, and people expect you to play all that music, but then you have to kind of sift through it and find the real soul music and music with good lyrical content
that
you can actually play on radio. So out of 100, you probably come out with about 10, 15.
Yeah. And see, the thing is, you know, it's a good, bad thing. The internet is a good thing because it can get it out to the world.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
That's what I love about the internet. But here's the other thing. You know, it also to make it to where it's oversaturated. So it's hard to find what's really good, you know, and it's so easy, you know, for people to. So again, like with music, back in the day, you know, you had to sit with music and live with music for a little while. And the good thing about it, you have to create a song that make a person feel some way. Because if a person feels some way, then it's going to last so much longer.
Yeah.
You know, when you identify, so there's many times you've heard a song, you're like, oh, I like that song. But then there's a times that same song, you was going through what that song felt, what it was saying. And it feels so much deeper than, you know, it's, you're connected with it. So it lives longer, you know? Yeah. So, and with music being so saturated and everybody can go into their bedroom and their closet and make music, it's going to be very hard to decipher through what's really, really good, you know?
Absolutely.
So I remember, like, again, in the beginning, when we used to get music and purchase music back in the day, you used to go and purchase it. You used to be able to sit with it. You used to read the credits. There was so much that was attached.
Involved in buying an album or a cassette.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you got to live and feel a music other than just hearing it.
Yeah.
You know, so streaming took out so many things that make us connect with music. You know, you had to literally take your hard-earned money. You had to go to a store. You had to sit through and find what you like. You had to read the credits. You had to put in the CD or tape or whatever. So there's a whole bunch of process that makes you connect with that song.
Absolutely.
So now you delete all of this, and all you do is just go on the streaming and just listen to it, and you throw it away and go to the next. There's no connections.
Absolutely.
There's no steps, you know.
Yeah.
So I remember I had put out my first project, which Lost Without You was on. My first project was called So It Was Written.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to take people back to a time. So when I put out the CD, I wanted to make people feel something. So the thing is, you know, your six senses, you have to hear, smell, touch, taste, you know, all these different things. So what I tried to create, I wanted to create a memory that people connected back with my project. So on my first, on So It Was Written, the thing is, the back of the CD looked like an envelope. I made it look like an envelope with a stamp on there.
Right.
And inside, when you open up the cover, I had the lyrics to one of my songs. So it looked like it was on a sheet of paper so you can read it or whatever.
Like a letter. But,
yeah, like a letter, exactly.
Yeah.
And then what I did, I had released my own fragrance called Simply Wonderful. So I took a strip of paper, I sprayed the fragrance on there, and I slid that inside the CD cover. So I wanted people to feel like once they got my project, you had to open it up, you had to look at it, you had to read it, you got to smell it. So I created a whole thing to where, and still to this day, people still say, hey, are you going to ever re-release that the way you did it? Because I had ran out that way.
Yes.
So you can stream it, people. So you can stream the project, but people wanted that feel. So that's the thing. We have to create. It's going to be hard, but we have to create a connection. We have to create steps on receiving music again. That's when they're going to live with it forever.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's what I had to do. I put a lot of thought into that, man. So I wanted people to
enjoy. That's amazing, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I wanted that feeling before I got into music because it was changing so much when I really started getting into music. So I feel like I had missed the boat for me. So I wanted to create that. So it was like, I wanted to put people in a time machine and bring them back when they received my project, and they still loved it to this day.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So in 2018, you teamed up with Jamecia Bennett of Sounds of Darkness, and you to create Man For Me.
Yep.
Which also won the USA Songwriter Competition.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk us about how that collaboration came about and what made the song so special?
It's funny because Jamecia, I was in Paso. So Jamecia Bennett, her mother is gospel legend Ann Nesby.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So her mother is Ann Nesby, who sung with the Sounds of Blackness. Excuse me. Jamecia's daughter is Paris Bennett, who was on the American Idol, you know, and she went very far and they still perform whatever. So Jamecia has either background sound, arranged or anything. She was always in the camp of the Jimmy Jam, Terry Lewis. So she's worked with everybody, you know. So it was always in passing because, of course, she stayed here that I ran into Jamecia.
Yeah, there's that connection again with Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis.
Hey, man. They are the nucleus. Like everybody got to come through them, you know, in Minneapolis or whatever. But yeah, so it was funny because I think it was maybe when I don't know, I think she probably noticed me when I did Lost Without You, but it was another track that she heard. And I think she inboxed me. She was like, hey, little bro, you know, and we was just in passing every now and then. She was like, I love what I've been hearing or whatever, and I wouldn't mind, you know, if you try to do, you know, write something for me or whatever. And actually, it was a song I wrote for her daughter first, Paris Bennett. I had wrote a song called Fall in Love Again.
Right.
And she heard Fall in Love Again, and her grandmother or Paris's grandmother, Jamisia's mom, had heard, you know, Fall in Love Again, and they really enjoyed that. So when she reached out to me and inboxed me on Facebook, she was like, you know, if you have anything, you know, let me know. So I connected with a friend of mine, producer Jay Isaac, and a friend of mine sent me the track for A Man For Me. And that song, like, just the melodies and the just everything about that hit me so hard. I loved it so much that it was one of those things that wrote itself. So I remember I'm like, okay, I got, you know, I told Jamisa, I got an idea, you know, for a song, whatever. And I sent her just the track, no lyrics. I sent her the track. And she's like, oh my God, I love this. She was like, you know, yeah, I wouldn't mind, you know, teaming up and writing with you or whatever. But we had already wrote the song or whatever. So I'm like, well, let me just send you what we have, you know, and you let me know. So I sent it. And I think my producer friend, you know, Jay Isaac, he had demoed what we had wrote. And sent to her, she was like, wow, I love that, you know. So we sent her that, and she loved it so much. And again, this was another thing that was a confident booster for me to let me know that, hey, I can do this. When she loved, and you're talking about a person who's worked with the best in the business. So when she heard that, and she was like, yo, I love it. And she recorded it, and she killed it, you know. So the thing is, too, when we recorded and we sent it off, right before I sent it to her, I had Fantasia in mind for that song. Yeah, but Jamisia killed it, you know, and it was like, wow, you know. So that was my first time hearing, or no, my second time hearing somebody sing something that I had wrote, and it brought it to life. And I got just as much joy of writing something for somebody else than I would myself, especially on the caliber of what she does, you know, and the vocal, you know, her vocal ability is par none, just amazing.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So then I submitted it into the competition, the USA songwriter competition. And I'm not just being biased because I wrote the song or whatever. I think we came number two. We clearly came number one. I'm sorry. Because when I heard what somebody else, you know, did, it was okay.
Yeah.
But what we wrote, I'm literally serious. If I can find what song it was, and I would let people judge for themselves, they would hear that we were supposed to hit number one. Because the vocal ability, they wasn't touching what she had done. I know they wasn't judging on vocal ability, but even how the song was written, Man For Me, you would have thought how I wrote the song, you would have thought that I'm saying, hey, you're the man for me, you know.
Yeah. You know,
but the twist on how we wrote the song and how I wrote the song or whatever, it was just, we got stiffed on that. I'm not going to lie. We're supposed to get number one.
Well, but, you know what? We're gonna give you your flowers.
I appreciate
right
it.
Now. And you know, it doesn't, because some of these things are rigged somehow. So
yes.
Yeah, we understand that. So we'll give you your flowers. That's why we talked about that song, because I thought it's worth a mention. And
for people, I appreciate it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Definitely appreciate it. I would have loved that $50,000 that they were trying to give, but I definitely appreciate it, you know.
I know.
The flowers coming from the people, though.
Oh, yeah. So now we're talking about current. Mm-hmm. you have a single, Let's Lay Back.
Yes.
I remember when I received that single, I was like, what is this? Who is this guy? It just blew my mind away. What inspired this track, and how did it compare to your previous releases?
You know what's crazy is, and that's how you know how big, you know, like the UK is and things like that. So before Let's Lay Back, we had put out Over There, I teamed up with someone over in the UK, and we had put out, we put out Let's Lay Back first. We put out Let's Lay Back first. But that was like a couple of years ago, and it did very well. Yeah, it did very well in the UK. So what I ended up doing is I felt like, okay, it was well received in the UK, but I hadn't really released it over here in the States.
Right.
So I was like, okay, I feel like, you know, there's a different audience and maybe it was time for people to hear some good music. So we kind of re-released it, but we remixed it and we called it, you know, the Groove Mix. So it had a different vibe, different feel to it or whatever, you know. And in my head, I wasn't thinking about how the UK was going to accept it again. So I put it out here, but it started climbing on charts over there again. So I'm like, they really enjoy good, you guys really enjoy good music. So I'm like, wow, man, it's, you know, so the Groove Mix did well. It's still doing good here, but I was in awe and shocked that it was going to, people's going to reach out again for the song over there, you know.
Yeah.
So in that, we also had put out a song called Nights Like This.
Yeah.
That killed over there, you know, and we put that out on vinyl. We put it out on 45, you know. So, and that's why I said, again, you know, I teamed up with a guy over there, and I think we released probably like 500 copies. We did the pre-sales, and it sold out in a week. And the crazy thing is, he told me, because he's over there, and he told me, he was like, Mike, I guarantee you, he was like, in a year, this vinyl was going to be worth over $100. I was like, for 45? I'm like, no.
He was like, absolutely.
He was like, I promise you this, if it's not worth, in a year time, if it's not worth over $100, I'll give you $300. I'm like, okay, I'm going to get my $300. And I think I Googled to see if I can find, you know, a copy of, you know, and you couldn't find it nowhere. But then I seen on there some people selling for like $150. I'm like, for the vinyl?
I'm like, I'm not selling mine. I'll keep it for another 10 years.
So I was amazed, bro. I'm like, wow, he was right. I'm like, see? So yeah, man, that's why I love the UK, because I feel like the hard work that I feel like, because people don't realize, they feel like, okay, I'm just gonna, they look at artists like we just do it and it's so easy to go and record.
Yeah.
There's not enough time and effort or whatever, but there's a lot of craft, there's a lot of time, there's a lot of money put into a song, just not even a whole project, just mind you, a song.
Yeah.
So like for Let's Lay Back, you know, I probably paid like $600-$700, you know, for one song to go in for a producer to mix, mix master, me going in singing it constantly over and over to a sound right, to it gets right. And then you want me to put it on streaming for pennies on the dollar?
Nah.
Like, how am I supposed to eat off that? I'm giving you life, man. I'm giving, and again, it's a beautiful thing. If you can monetize it correctly and you can utilize the streaming to where, everybody who heard it, but you have something else to give them to where you can come and tour and you can make that money back.
Yeah.
But majority of us can't afford to go and tour, you know? So it's like, you're not going to get that back. So it's like, some people's like, okay, you can either, some people's like, well, I'll pay to, you know, I'll do it for free. Some people say I'll do it for free or whatever. But when you're streaming, you're not doing it for free. You're almost paying. I'm paying to play. I'm paying because all this money I put in there, I'm not going to get that back off of streaming. So I'm paying, you know, hundreds and hundreds of dollars for you to listen to and for you to judge and say, eh, that was all right. That hurts, man. That hurts as an artist.
Nah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Apart from that, what else has been the biggest challenge you've faced as an independent artist?
That's probably the biggest, you know, situation there, you know, is the streaming thing. So for me, I love the fact of being an artist, you know, being an artist and creating. But see, the messed up part is that you can't afford to be just an artist. I don't care for the business side of everything. But the business side is very, you're in some murky waters with the business of, you know, and then it constantly changes now with all this new technology, even with the whole AI thing now, and, you know, it's ridiculous. But you can't afford to be just an artist, you know, because I know I lost thousands of dollars, you know, because of the music business. So that alone, I'm not going to lie to you, made me not want to do music.
Yeah.
You know, the business side is so, and it's hard to find, you know, good people that be on your team and on your side, you know, to help you get to that level of where you know you should be and where you could be, you know. And that's been my challenge, because nobody, like they say, nobody can make it by themselves.
Yep.
You need a team. And to be honest with you, you know, that's the part that hurt me the most, because I had so many people come up to me and be like, yo, why you haven't made it yet? You know, they was like, Mike, you got the sound, you got the look, you got all this. And I hear that so much to where I'm almost bitter to it, because I know that I could be in a better position or whatever.
Yeah.
Then, you know, what I see in my head, I can be that and more, you know, but then, you know, it's very hard, you know, and people just don't trust the business, you know, of the music business anymore, you know. And that's why I say I had actually thought about, you know, coming and living in the UK. I feel like I could, you know, I can be successful, you know, there, you know, but it's the whole navigating, excuse me, to be in that point. But yeah, it's just, that's the challenging thing now is the trajectory of where music is now.
Yeah.
You know, that's the biggest part of it, you know, now. And it's uncertain, you know, because of the streaming, because of AI, you know, you can't do it by yourself. So you got to have, you know, a great team behind you. And that's the hardest part, is finding someone who believes in you that much.
Yeah.
You know, and I've been taken advantage of, you know, in this business. Like, I've spent, you know, thousands of dollars for people promising something, you know, and it just didn't go that way.
Yeah.
So that's the hardest part, man. Trying to stay. And as you're getting older in this business or whatever, it starts to take a wind out of yourself, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, you know, people come in. Still now I get people promising stuff, but now I'm like, whatever, you really have to show me. Words don't do me any justice no more. You have to show me what it is, you know? So I have some cool people, some great people around me now. And we're trying to navigate and put things together, you know. Yeah. God willing that it comes to that point, but I don't have an expectation now. It's a sad thing. I don't have an expectation, but because it's like I've always had an expectation, and then when you don't meet that expectation, you know, it hurts me a lot.
Yeah.
So now I get it to the point where I still try to do it. If things happen that way, great. If they don't happen that way, great. It doesn't kill me to where I'm like, you know, I don't want to do this anymore. You know, so I leave it in God's hand, man. And I hope that when I create a song, that it does something real big, that it can get me to that next level. Because honestly, I'm going to tell you, when I released Nights Like This, I just knew Nights Like This was going to take me into the stratosphere. I truly felt that way.
Yeah, yeah. You know?
But without, and I feel like it could have, but without the right people, like I said, it's a machine, man. It's a machine. Without the right proper funding, without the right team, you know, there's a very few that get lucky and turn into a TikTok dance. And next, you know, it's viral, you know, but
yeah,
even
if it goes viral, I mean, you don't actually make as much as you should.
Yeah, very true.
I think the music industry needs to do better.
Yes.
At taking care of artists.
Yes, they do. Yes, yeah. They do, man. Yeah.
I think that's the bottom line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
My next question was, I was going to ask you, what piece of advice would you give to aspiring artists looking to make it for themselves as independent
artists? I think we kind of spoke on that.
And I think, I mean, all you've just said, I think that's advice already. So
yeah,
we'll go to the next question, which is, how do you balance staying true to your soulful roots while adapting, you know, the evolving R&B landscape?
Yeah, I mean, for that, It's honestly finding people like yourselves, finding your true audience, you know, is going to keep you true to who you are.
Right.
You know, because that's why I said, had it not been, honestly, had the people in had the UK never found, you know, Mike DeCole, my music or whatever, I probably would have gave up. I probably would have gave up because I feel like my music is so dated and people not really, every now and then you hear somebody be like, oh, that's, I like that, da da da. But it's not enough to give you the motivation to keep going. So for, again, for artists, you know, if you want to stay true to who you are, like, for one, stay true to who you are, but find your core audience because they're going to keep you true. You know what I mean? So, like I said, when I create soul R&B, I know I have the group of people who truly love soul R&B that support it. You know, like I said, still to this day, I get people inboxing me and telling me how much they love me and they're glad they found my music, all that stuff there. So I hold those people in high regards. I love when I meet people that way. That way I can, you know, continue push music out to that core group of people. And it keeps me motivated. I'm like, okay, well, I have somebody that I know who's listening, you know. And sometimes, and like they say, you know, the world is, it's a big circle. It comes back again, resurgence type of thing. So if you stay true to who you are, eventually it's going to come back around and they're going to hear something. Ooh, I like that, you know, and it's going to, you know, catch on again. So, but if you're trying to change and become what people, what you think people want to hear, you're going to get lost and you're not going to know who you are, you know? So it's like, I've tried to do stuff that was way, you know, left of me, but I have an R&B soulful voice. I can't, I don't say I can't, I don't want to do that. It don't feel good to me, you know? So I got to do what feels good to me, what feeds my soul, you know? And if it feeds my soul, I know eventually it's going to feed someone else. And I will probably feel, I feel so much better, you know, when I have five people who live with my music and say it did something for them versus somebody who just didn't even, you know, or hundreds of people who never really sat with it. Because I remember when I first put that, my first project out, so it was written, I had, just to get people to hear it, I had gave CDs away because I wanted to hear it. But this is how I knew that I did something good, because the next time they saw me when I gave it, they was like, hey, I need to pay you for this. It was like, yo, I love this song. I love this. And they'll tell me the songs that they love. I'm like, they heard it. They listened to it.
Yeah.
You know? So I would rather a person, you know, I'd rather give it away and you live with it than a person pay me for it, but never even, you know, listen to it.
True.
You know?
True.
So that's, you know, yeah. So that's how, again, going back to, that's how you stay true to what it is. Just stay true to what you're doing. You'll find your people, you'll find your audience, and you stick with them and they'll stick with you.
Yeah. So if I heard you correctly, and I think it's also very good advice to aspiring artists, is, you know, the key is to stay true to yourself, be authentic.
Yes.
And I think because of today's landscape with social media, we are all chasing likes.
Yes.
On,
yes,
you know, Facebook, whether it's Instagram or, you know, all other platforms, people are just looking for how many likes did I get.
They're looking for the trending things.
Yeah. Rather than something that's more sustainable. And I think that's what's killing the music industry.
Yes, in sense, yes.
Because now people are not producing real authentic stuff. They're just producing stuff for the likes.
Yeah.
Rather than being true to themselves. Those were powerful words. And I really appreciate your candor and, you know, just opening up to us. Before we finish off, I'm just going to ask you a couple of fun questions. You know, if you were to spend a day in someone else's shoes, who might that be?
Spend a day in someone else's shoes? You know, it'll probably be Stevie Wonder.
Right. Okay.
Because as a singer-songwriter and one of the best at what he did, I would love to see how he sees the world.
Right.
And, you know, and how he painted these pictures without actual vision. So to think, you know, and you know, they always say, once you lose a sense, your other senses are heightened, you know? So because, you know, his eyesight or whatever, how he saw, you know, that would probably be my, you know, my go-to, Stevie Wonder.
Wow, that's amazing. I think we do take it for granted when we listen to Stevie's music, you know. I mean, it goes back decades, and you listen to his music and you just think, oh my God, this is absolutely amazing. But you stop to think about the challenges that he faced on a daily basis.
Yes. Like how do you paint a picture without sight, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah.
That's amazing. Pretty amazing. Yeah, yeah.
Definitely.
Wow. So what's the worst piece of advice you've ever received?
The worst. Trying to think the worst piece of advice. I don't know if it's the worst. I'm trying to.
It's a bit controversial, isn't it?
yeah, it is. It is. You know, because I'm in this place, like, and I heard someone say this, but I guess you could take it either way.
Yeah.
When a person say, never give up on your dreams.
Right.
You know, and the reason I say is kind of the worst, because I'm still torn between it. Because when people say never give up on your dreams and you just go full throttle, just always focus on your dreams or whatever, and you don't get the life that you had in your head, you know, and you pass up all these other opportunities that you could have been great in, but you were so focused on this, you know, that you missed other great opportunities, you know. At the end of the day, and it's time for you to go on to the next life or whatever, you know, would you be happy? Would you still be happy, you know, with never achieving that success? Or do you think you'd have been happy, you know, taking that other road? You know, some people gave up on their dreams and they went on and had a better life.
Yeah.
But then I question those people who got the, you know, who gave up on their dreams and they had, you know, monetary, you know, things or whatever. Do they regret giving up on their dreams, even though they had a better life financially? You know, so I'm kind of, the reason I'm torn myself is because I haven't achieved what I wanted to achieve, and yet I'm still, you know, trying to pursue that dream. And I get torn at times when I get so many letdowns. Should I just be done? And should I just go and pursue other things? And if I pursue other things, will I live with that regret that I didn't keep going? Because you know how they always say, just keep going. As soon as you turn away, that's when you're going to be successful. So we're always at that place. Like, if I turn away, is this it right here?
Yeah.
You know, so I'm torn on if that's the worst advice or not, you know. So I don't know. That's the only thing that sticks to my mind or whatever. And I still haven't decided if it's the worst piece of advice or not. I'm still torn because I know music is still in my heart, you know, and I still have this vision in my head on, not saying that I'm trying to be nowhere near, you know, Michael Jackson, but get to the point where I'm doing what I love to do and be able to provide for my life and continuously do what I love to do and give. Yeah. So that's the best, that's the best I can come with, if, you know, as far as is that, you know,
yeah.
Always keep me going too, and that's just me, is I feel like God give us, and I'm a spiritual man, I feel like God gives us gifts, you know, and like they said, your gifts are supposed to make way for you.
Absolutely.
So my thing is, if I turn my back on my gift, is that like a slap in God's face? You know, hey, I gave you this for you to share. So, and also they say, your gift isn't quite for you. Your gift is to give to the world.
Yeah.
You know? So I gift you to gift other people.
Yeah.
So who am I to give up the gift that he gave me, you know?
Yeah.
Because to me, it's like, okay, well, out of God, I don't trust you. You know, it's a slap in the face. I don't, you know. So that's what always, when I think about it, I think about that, and then I turn back around. Oh, yeah, here we go again. You know, let me go ahead and just push through. You know, that's the only thing I can say, man. That keeps me going ahead when I want to give up.
I mean, that it's quite deep, but I would say, I mean, if I'm passionate about something, I don't give up on it. Because there's a reason why I'm passionate about it. And sometimes the reason why it's not working is probably my positioning and the people I'm aligned with.
Definitely that.
That's just how I look at it. I could be wrong, but that's been my my way of approaching things. You know, I've walked away from opportunities, but I've not walked away from my dream. Opportunities
Like I
that I
say,
thought were tied to my dream, I've walked away from them, and it looked like a silly thing to do at that time, but months later, I actually saw other avenues opening that wouldn't have opened if I had stayed where I was, you know.
it is
And
like
I
a
guess that's life.
it's a chess checkers game or whatever. Like I say, if certain moves in, you have to move pieces in order to get through, you know, to where you're going to. So just like you were just saying too, you know, you may have to remove yourself from certain people. You gotta change up how that you're doing things to get to that next level or whatever. So
Absolutely.
maybe you're stuck because maybe you do have to step back a move and let other things pass and then step up or whatever. So you have to move around on. I agree with you.
And one final one. What's the best compliment you've ever received?
Man, pretty much like you're not like a song, but the best compliment is like, dude, I love your whole project in its entirety. You know, how did you get inspired? You know, when they take very interest. So that's the thing. Like I said, that was my first project, and I think I had like 17 tracks on there. And they always tell me that's a no skip project, and they heard it from front to back, and they love it. And I had one guy tell me, so the best compliment, again, I put this project out probably in 2015 or something like that, 16, and I probably seen this guy probably about 8 months ago or so. And he told me, because he still had the same old car, he have a CD changer with a whole bunch of CDs in it. He's like, bro, I have not taken your CD out of my CD changer. I'm like, bro, that was years ago. He's like, bro, I keep that in. So that was the best compliment I got, that he never took my CD out of his CD changer or whatever. That was the best compliment. I'm like, oh, dude, I love that. You know,
Amazing.
so that was probably the best compliment. On top of that, or writing for someone, and they told me how much they love my writing. So going back to like Jamisia or whatever, you know. That also, one more. I just thought about that one. So again, I told you my one of my heroes is Dave Hollister of Blackstreet. He heard my song Simply Wonderful. And he promoted the song for me. And he was like, if you don't do nothing else, he was like, go and listen to Mike DeCole's Simply Wonderful. He was like, that is an amazing song. I wish I could have wrote that song. And that was it right there for me. I'm like, yo, I'm that guy. I don't care what nobody else say. I'm that dude.
And that's a perfect place to finish this interview, because you can't top that, can you?
Can't talk about me.
Really, really appreciate your time and your honesty and opening up to us. Really enjoyed chatting to you. But before we let you go, we're gonna ask you to do us the honor of introducing your single, which is I think is still doing quite well.
Yes,
And
it is.
it's on it's on and off of my playlist because of stuff that happens. Let's lay back.
Yes, sir. So, man, listen, thank you for one, thank you for having me. Appreciate the time or whatever. But yo, this is Mike DeCole, and I want to let y'all listen to Let's Lay Back, the Groove Mix.
Thank you.
All I wanna do in this moment is just lay in love on you. All I wanna do in this moment is just lay in love on you. Unwind and relax, baby.
the crazy, crazy, crazy. Rest and wind and relax, baby. See, I wanna get to know you better. Wanna get to know your every move. Get you in the mood. See, I wanna get to show you better. Wanna get to take you around the moon. Take you on a cruise. Oh, from all the crazy, crazy, crazy. Rest and wind and relax, baby. Let's set the sail and cruise the ocean blue. On a love made for two. Girl, I hope you brought your dancing shoes. Cause tonight we're gonna dance away the blues. Just me and you. From all the crazy, crazy, crazy. Let's unwind and
just laying love on you. All I wanna do in this moment.